Blog Talk Radio.
It's 6:17. Apologies for the technical difficulties at the start of the show. Kelly here, and it's the 31st. It is the last day of August, and we have a situation with the Secretary of State being accused of embezzlement, money laundering, and campaign money. A 44-page complaint was sent out by New Mexico Attorney General Hector Balderas. And the AG's office investigators conducted an investigation after getting a confidential tip that numerous cash deposits had been made into Duran's account that were inconsistent with her income sources. So I would think she's going to be in court pretty soon on this. All right, so there's some people that are upset about Mount McKinley being renamed. I do have a clip on Duran in just a minute. I'm just, like I say, had a few technical problems this morning. People are upset that Mount McKinley has been renamed by as Denali, which was the native name. And so, believe it or not, people in Ohio are upset about this, because that's where President McKinley was from. And anyway, having spent a couple of years up in Alaska off and on, I was a professional fisherman up there, worked in the canneries, and did some other stuff up there. I doubt the people in the state are impressed by this. The kind of stuff that the president does is all kind of, in my opinion, most of it's low-hanging fruit, symbolic things that he thinks will help establish his legacy of being progressive, or, you know, so I don't know what he gains from doing this personally, but all right. So other news, kind of waiting for these clips to come up and everything is super slow. Speaking of mountains, there's this very weird story of these three girls that went up on this climb, and two of them fell off, and the other one, you know, they were climbing together, and they were going up. They lived up in, I think they lived in Montana or someplace like that, Wyoming, and they were trying to climb this mountain, but they were ill-prepared. They were not using ropes on the one hand. And on the other hand, they took the wrong route. And so they ended up getting kind of isolated. Now, the two girls had separated off from the other girl. And so when they're climbing, these two girls fell. Now who knows how it happened, except they were climbing off the straight route. And this is in the Grand Tetons. Two female climbers, 27 and 28, killed in a fall during a climb of Wyoming Mountain without ropes, but friend is saved on ledge at 11,500 feet. So a girl by the name of Tyler Strandberg, 27, and Catherine Nix, 28, fell to their deaths. And so this other girl couldn't see them. And so she called basically 911 to get help. And she was unaware until the rescuers came and got her. And it was a very perilous climb to go up and get this girl who was saved. She was unaware that her two friends had died, and these two girls had fallen 200 feet. So they were on Tiwanat Mountain, sixth tallest peak in the Teton Range. So they sound like kind of outgoing and fun girls, adventurous and everything, but they weren't using ropes. And so because they didn't have information on the best way to go up the face of the mountain, they got isolated, and without the ropes and, you know, a good map and everything, they just fell. So it's kind of a tragedy. Looking for this information. I'm just got a slow computer this morning. So, all right, here we go on the Mount McKinley. I don't know if you care. I mean, Mount McKinley is this giant mountain up. It's the tallest mountain in North America, giant mountain up in Alaska. And it's just kind of one of these things that the president is doing it probably in part to make a legacy of environmentalism, and another part of, you know, being sympathetic to natives and stuff. On the other hand, probably to upset his enemies. I mean, seriously, I think a lot of what this guy does is to try to provoke people. I think that's in his personality. Anyway, here's a little bit from Fox News on this. And I'm waiting for this clip to play anyway. So, in any event, Denali is this giant mountain, and people go up there. If you had ever followed this movie that was made on this book by John Krakauer, Into the Wild, which is kind of a crazy, crazy story about this kid that went up to Alaska, and he had this dream of being kind of going back to the roots, or being a naturalist or whatever. So he goes up in this, ends up staying in this bus in the foothills of Mount Denali or Mount McKinley. And so he, without a lot of knowledge, just thinking that if he was kind of, you know, using basic survival stuff, he would be able to make it up there. And he ended up, I had read this book a few years ago. It was a very strange and kind of a sad story that he had ended up living in this bus and was eating something that was causing him to become dehydrated and to lose weight. And so each day that he's up there and trying to go through the survival mode, he gets a little bit sicker and a little bit sicker. And he's apparently, and the Into the Wild, the 1996 nonfiction book written by John Krakauer of Christopher McCandless. Now, this was a kid that had gone down the Colorado River, I think, all the way to Mexico, and had almost been killed doing that. And then had ended up going, I think he was kind of a lost person, and he ended up going to going up into Alaska, trying to have an adventure, but also just to experience life and everything. But they said he was well-meaning, but uneducated. So if you ever get a chance to get that book or to see the movie. It's highly rated. All right. So anyway, if you've been watching the media, some very, I would say, kind of a strange story came out about Donald Trump. And the story has to do with Sarah Palin possibly becoming his running mate. Now, honestly, and I was thinking about this, I like Sarah Palin. I think she's really was ruthlessly attacked and not defended by the GOP. GOP names her the vice president, and then when they start and attacking her, you know, and she's not a perfect person, but she seemed relatively intelligent, was very witty, funny, kind of engaging, kind of fun to listen to, and was a down-to-earth person. You know, she's a middle-class lady that runs for governor in Alaska and ends up getting elected, and was highly rated up to the point till she came into the U.S. presidential race. But anyway, that she interviewed, she's on some channel, some new cable network. She interviews Donald Trump, and she I have to admit, she did kiss Donald Trump's butt quite a bit, kissed Trump's rump. I would say that I would agree with most of the things that she said to him, but it was then mentioned that she could possibly be vice presidential candidate for him. And I just, honestly, I just think she's too damaged. And I hate to say that, and I know there are second acts in American politics and everything, but I just feel like that she's damaged. And although she would bring a lot of her followers onto a ticket with him, the things that have been criticized about Donald Trump, you could probably apply some of those to you know, Palin as well. And I think if he got someone like, I don't know if Ben Carson would be the right person, because then you've got two people without political experience, but maybe, I don't know, Cruz, Rubio, you listen to the names of the people who have experience and who are highly rated by the party. I don't think Chris Christie would make it, because the things that people don't like about Trump, they don't like about Christie too. Tends to be a little more secular, very critical of his opponents, that type of thing. But, you know, you could get some person to come onto the ticket to balance it. So if you had maybe Cruz come in, Trump has not been seen as a real religious person, although he says his favorite book is the Bible. Cruz is a Christian. His dad was a minister. Trump doesn't have any experience in government. Cruz, you know, has been in the Senate for a few years now. And so you kind of balance it out. But I don't know, 523-1450, if you disagree with me. I do like Sarah Palin. I think she'd be a good vice president, but at the same time, I just think she might be damaged goods. I mean, that's my impression. 805-6180, 805-6180 to text in. It is 6:30, and let's take a little break, and we'll be back to talk a little bit more about this stuff. And I'll get you more on this story about Diane Duran. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. It's 6:36, and I do have a little clip here on this Mount McKinley name change.
President Obama will make history today in Alaska, where he will rename the country's tallest peak. The more than 20,000-foot-tall Mount McKinley will once again be known by its Native American name, Denali. The focus of the president's cross-continental trip to Alaska is climate change. Bill Plant is in Anchorage with why some are slamming his move to rename McKinley. Bill, good morning.
Well, good morning. The name of the world's third-highest mountain peak has been controversial for more than a century. Returning it to its original name of Denali is a nod to Alaska's Native American population. They consider it sacred. But politically, this is something that only a lame duck president could safely do. Not everyone approves, but Alaskans of both political parties do seem to like it.
We're honored to be able to officially recognize the mountain as Denali.
Mr. Obama's trip was preceded by the renaming of North America's highest peak from Mount McKinley, after America's 25th President William McKinley, to its original Native American name, Denali, a decision heralded by Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski.
I'd like to thank the president for working with us to achieve this significant change to show honor, respect, and gratitude to the Athabascan people of Alaska.
In President McKinley's home state of Ohio, some criticized the change. Senator Rob Portman tweeted that it's another example of the president going around Congress.
So I'm looking forward to talking with Alaskans about how we can work together to make America the leader on climate change around the globe.
President Obama will be in Alaska for 3 days, calling for action on climate change and for improvements to fishing conservation with Alaska's Native Americans. He's also expected to tour one of the state's shrinking glaciers and to visit communities in Alaska's Arctic region, becoming the first sitting president to do so. What the president won't highlight while he is here in Alaska is the decision to allow Shell Oil new drilling permits for oil in the Arctic Ocean.
Oh, well. Got to get that oil from somewhere. And I'm looking for something that you might find interesting. There's a lot of stuff out there on, there's this great story in the Hamptons, which is up in New York, by New York City. Hillary for prison signs keep getting stolen. So this guy is, in the last cycle, couple elections, this guy supported McCain. And he said that he had put these signs up and then they immediately got stolen. So then he put up an electric fence and one of them was just stolen right in the middle of the day. And this is from the New York Post. So this guy, Andy Sabin, Hillary for prison 2016 signs lasted little more than a day before they were stolen from in front of his Amagansett home last week. So then he put up his electric fence and he also put a camera on him. Now he had people follow him home and ask where they could buy these signs. And he says, living in a town with a lot of left-wing wackos, that's what happens. And they find that Hillary's a very dishonest person. And they complain that she's allowed to get away with the email stuff. Petraeus was fined $100,000 and everything. But he says, in considering the possibilities, I would say it's almost more likely it was taken by a diehard Republican who wanted it for a souvenir. So it's kind of an attractive sign, I guess. I don't think there's any chance that she'll end up in prison. But and I can't really get a pulse on this story with the emails. I know most people that I've talked to or heard him talk about it don't like it. But there's been a number of articles that have come out of commentaries saying that she's done nothing wrong, that, let's get down to business. She's not going to drop out of the campaign because of this. And I think one of the things that has been brought up is that she doesn't follow the rules and therefore is not a good person to be the president. I found a very interesting statement. I don't know if you know who Stacey Dash is, but she's an African American actress who was in a movie called Clueless, and then she became kind of infamous for backing Mitt Romney, and so she has come out as a pretty conservative person, and she is calling Hillary Clinton a sociopath on Fox News, something called Fox's News Channel Midday Show Outnumbered. I had never heard of it before, but she's a person who actually took a pretty big risk, because in Hollywood, in the black community, two groups that she's in, there's not really much criticism of the president. So if I can find a clip of it, I'll play that for you in just a minute. Let's take a break, though, and I'll come back and I'll have that for you. I thought it was kind of an interesting thing, a very passionate statement by her. Kelly O'Connell, 643, you're listening to AM Las Cruces. AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and 805-6180 to text, 805-6180 to text, and 523-1450 to call in. All right, so here is this thing from this girl, Stacey Dash, on Hillary.
This woman is just irreprehensible. I can't even fathom how she thinks she can speak for women.
Outnumbered, which is a show that airs on Fox News during the day, was discussing comments made by Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton at a campaign event in Cleveland. Comments that angered panelist and former Clueless star Stacey Dash. Clinton said this when speaking about the Republican Party's stance against abortion rights and their efforts to defund Planned Parenthood.
Extreme views about women, we expect that from some of the terrorist groups. We expect that from people who don't want to live in the modern world. But it's a little hard to take coming from Republicans who want to be the president of the United States.
Clinton's comments got the hosts riled up.
They do female genital mutilation. They rape them. They traffic them. It is brutal.
Watch
it is in
them.
No way
make
comparable.
Them watch their children get crucified.
Yeah.
Yeah. This woman is just irreprehensible. I can't even fathom how she thinks she can speak for women.
Then Stacey Dash referred to the Democratic frontrunner as a sociopath when asking her co-panelist, Dr. Mark Siegel, a question.
And this is what happens, I don't know, doctor, you tell me, with sociopaths. When they start to get cornered and they start to get caught, don't they get desperate and start saying things that are just outrageous and basically end up ultimately hanging themselves?
That's absolutely right. I would add, though, in this case, it may be even more calculated than that.
All right. So there were a lot of people that didn't appreciate Hillary Clinton calling the Republicans, saying that they're terrorists. So, all right. I have got a little clip here. I don't know if you've seen the moon the last couple of nights, but it's been very big and bright, and it's called a super moon. I've got a clip here from NASA. Super moon lunar eclipse, August 31st, 2015. This is published this morning.
If you look outside on September 27th, 2015, you can catch a glimpse of a very rare event in the night sky, a supermoon lunar eclipse. To understand what this is, first, take a full moon. Now add the closest approach the moon makes to the Earth on its elliptical orbit, which results in it looking up to 14% larger in diameter. That's a supermoon. Now combine this with a lunar eclipse, when the moon passes directly behind the Earth into its shadow, giving it a red tint. Now, you have a supermoon lunar eclipse. This is a really special event, because it doesn't happen very often. Let's take a look back. Since 1900, a supermoon lunar eclipse has only happened 5 times. A lot changes here on Earth in between these moments. In fact, the last time you could see this event was 1982. And if you miss seeing it in 2015, your next opportunity won't come until 2033. So mark your calendar and head outside.
Well, check it out. That already happened, but the moon is incredible. And I think there's supposed to be 3 supermoons. And now you've got also this blood moon that is coinciding with these Jewish holidays. Which is kind of an extraordinary event that some people think is kind of the mark of the apocalypse or whatever. I've got a couple of stories, a couple of New Mexico stories when we come back. One is about a former New Mexico sheriff dropping F-bombs during a traffic stop, and the other one, well, maybe we'll just stick with that one. Kelly O'Connell, 651-523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text, and I'll get into your text when we come back. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. We'll be back momentarily. It is 6:54, and according to the weather that I saw last night, there was not supposed to be any chance of any rain today. It's 68 degrees right now. 97 is the high. 68 is the low. We did get a little bit of rain 2 days ago where I was at, but it was in one of these small cells, and not a lot of rain, but just enough to kind of wet the garden, you know. All right, so here is this guy. He says he gets pulled over, and he ends up saying this. Now I know why people don't like effing cops. Former Cibola County Sheriff Salvador Benavides, and he told the cops he wished they'd get killed. Check this out. This is from KRQE.
New Mexico sheriff caught on camera behaving badly after a traffic stop. At one point, he even tells the police officer who pulled him over to, quote, get killed. A warning, there is strong language in this video. Here's News 13's Marissa Lucero.
Salvador Benavides is no stranger to the law. Just last week, a Grants police officer pulled the ex-sheriff over after the officer says he swerved into his lane. Benavides pulls over, the sergeant approaches his truck, and everything appears to start off fine.
Everything okay? I had to dip into my lane there. I thought you were going to hit me.
I had to move this.
The sergeant continues to ask Benavides for his license and other documents. That's when you see Benavides' head pop out from the door.
Have a seat in your vehicle.
Please tell me.
Have a seat in your vehicle.
The officer claims Benavides lunged at him. After a quick scuffle, the officer finally gets Benavides in handcuffs.
You don't get out of your car in the traffic stop and you say,
in the police report, the sergeant claims Benavides went on to say, quote, I know why people hate cops. A scene the chief of police says his officers shouldn't have to encounter, especially from a man who's been on the other side of the badge.
Like I told Mr. Benavides, you know, he would not have put up with that behavior when he was in law enforcement. And it's just kind of unacceptable behavior.
Marissa Lucero, KRQE, News 13.
What's the world coming to? Anyway, he's been on the other side of the badge, so maybe that's why he moved out of that side of the badge. Maybe he couldn't take it anymore. So anyway, I was scouring the headlines for interesting stories about Donald Trump to see if there was anything you might find of note. And I found a pretty good story. I'm going to read it next. I'll go over some of the highlights on the next hour. But I think that there's stories about why Trump is doing well. One of which I think that really kind of captured what I think believe is going out there. I think that Hillary and Jeb, by the way, Jeb is not doing so well. Hillary's not doing well because of her own kind of like her own self-harm, but Jeb's not doing well. I think Jeb, Walker, all of these guys on the right were so caught off guard by Trump that they didn't know how to react, and they didn't know, you know, in politics, people steal, or pardon me, they borrow ideas. So in this case, it would be so obvious that they were borrowing the Trump's positions, and yet these guys are going to have to do something like that just to kind of capture his mojo. And so I think what Trump is doing is just summing up classic positions that a lot of people feel that are not talked about anymore. And he's got a huge burst of momentum from that. Anyway, 6:59 on the button. We'll be right back after a break on the hour, and I've got some great analysis for you and a few funny stories as well. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text, and I'll get into those texts. I always forget the texts for some reason, but I'll get into them early next hour. Well, it's August 31st, super moon time. Get out there and take a look at that moon. I tried to take some pictures last night of the moon. I don't know how well those are going to come out, but it was very bright and very big. And then I saw the mountain a couple of days ago. I saw the moon coming up over the Oregon Mountains, and it was kind of came in between two peaks, and it was just incredible. And all right, so there's a story in the Sun News. We'll get into this presidential stuff later, but a story in the Sun News by Mr. Steve Ramirez, 8:25, a couple of days ago, almost a week ago, talking about a green landscape, almost lush, that's out in the desert. And so it's got some pictures of kind of in the foothills of the Oregons. And it really is green. I mean, it's amazing out there. Now, if you think about it, I mean, some of these little rainstorms that we've gotten, I think that one rainstorm was, what, an inch and a half? And through Tuesday, through last Tuesday, 6.99 inches of rain has fallen at the Las Cruces International Airport. Even more, just quoting out of here, even more has fallen in numerous areas across the city, including a little more than 8 inches on Las Cruces East Mesa. That's interesting. It's an inch difference. And 8 inches in downtown. At the Sun News, about 8 inches. So I think I'd mentioned this before, but this is a good time to get out and get up to Dripping Springs. I don't know if you've ever been up there, but it is a beautiful, there's some nice hikes that are not too difficult, pools of water, and there's probably the streams have water in them down there. Sometimes usually they don't a little farther down, but I would assume now that they do because there's been water that's been soaking up in those aquifers up there, those little areas that collect water. I don't know if that's the technically correct use of aquifer, but you know what I mean? So the rain comes into these rocks, kind of soaks in there, and then it comes out. So with the monsoon season, they say it's the super monsoon. It's the Godzilla of the El Nino is what I mean. And so we should be getting more of these rains, and they're worried in California about flooding and such because, you know, it's been dry. It's been bone dry for about 4 years there. And I was reading stories last night on the internet about, it's like third in some of these places in California, it's like the third world. They literally don't have any more water. You know, so hopefully they'll get their aquifers and their rivers and streams, their lakes and ponds refilled. You know, it happened in Texas in 1 month, to where they got those giant, so many floods going through between Houston all the way up to Dallas-Fort Worth, that they said that the water in the lakes is 30 feet higher than it was. Now, we need that in the West. We need that in California. We need it up in the North Pacific Northwest, too. But also to refill Lake Mead, which is outside of Las Vegas, where I grew up. So, all right, Tuesday is the beginning of hunting season in New Mexico. Hunting season for doves, blue grouse, band-tailed pigeons, and squirrels opens Tuesday in Doniana County and other areas of the state. And you can go to wildlife.state.nm.us or just, you know, look up NM Hunting. Tuesday is also the start of the hunting season for deer, elk, and turkey, archery hunts, and for most small game. Game and fish departments expect 36,000 elk hunters, 27,000 deer hunters, 4,400 pronghorn antelope hunters, and 30,000 small game hunters this season. So September 1 is a huge day in that. And they say there's very favorable conditions for dove. Now, the dove here tend to be the white-winged dove, whereas where I grew up, we had, you know, the mourning doves and everything. But they look fairly similar. And to be honest, I put seed down in the backyard every day, and these white-winged doves come in, and sometimes, occasionally, I'll get a quail. There's quail that live in my neighborhood. That's kind of an amazing thing to see these quail walking along with these teeny, tiny baby quail with them. So they get a lot of elk in this country now. Somebody was telling me, I'd never heard of this before, but there is a mule deer collapse in population that they say is due, I think, in part to drought and in part to elk taking their territory over. So that was kind of interesting. All right. Other local stuff. All right. So, oh, and by the way, City of Las Cruces won't collect unpaid red light camera fines at this point. Unpaid red flex fines amounting to $3 million are going to be written off. All right. So we got some stuff going on locally, part of which is Nathan Small, I believe, saying that he's not going to be running for city council. What's his next move? And do you think that he was maybe felt like he had to get out of the city council after the disagreement over minimum wage? If so, if he had to do it over again, would he take a different stand? I've heard also that he's running or planning on running for the Senate or the House. I can't remember which one. So I guess that would be a step up, huh? For, in his opinion anyway, go from a city position to a state position. I've got a little campaign material here on Philip Van Veen. I think this guy's trying to get on the show to do an interview. So going to be running for Las Cruces City Council District 2. And he's the president of Eagle Security. So we'll get him on here. If you're running or planning on running, get a hold of me. Come on. I'll get you on as soon as I can. And I've told you this before, but I'm still baffled by it. The GOP, as far as I can remember, has never contacted me in this city. Now, is it because they're so successful that they don't need the help? The question answers itself. I think it's 35% of the city are in the county are GOP or identified, and the rest are Democrats. So you've got a resource here. It's the only live venue in town on a regular basis. And for 4 years, you never, you know, I mean, I've called the GOP and I just stopped. That was fairly early in the history of the show, but it's just, it's so puzzling to me, you know, that these candidates so badly need exposure. Now, I've had a number of candidates on the show, but that's almost always these people calling me up, or, you know, or me calling them up, asking them if they want to come on the show. I'm totally baffled why somebody wouldn't want to get free publicity on their ideas and their campaign on in a venue where it is friendly, you know, and also probably had more contact with the Democrat Party or with Democrats, you know, which I find once again strange. But it is the that it wouldn't be instead the GOP. But if you're thinking of running, I will, you know, and you contact me, or you, if you run, I'll put you on as much as I can, because I think the people in the city need to be exposed to the candidates. And that is equally true for Democrats as Republicans. I don't differentiate. If somebody asks me if they can come on the show, I don't care what party you're in. Let's get you on the air and let's get the information of the voters. But the GOP is a problem, has a problem nationally. I believe it has a problem locally. We can do better. When I say we, also, I mean, both parties, somebody sent out a poison letter about me in the Democratic Party right when I had asked them to pass out the invitation to come on the show. So a number of people got this email, and I believe it was sent out by Bill McCamley, who's obviously my number one fan, the gay evangelist, Bill McCamley, sends out this poison. And I mean, what is he really is just harming people in his own party, because you come on here, I have you as a guest. I'm not really mean to anybody. I'm not going to pull a Trump on anybody. You get a chance to get your message out. You can get your message out to the people who you need to support. You've already got the support of the Dems. You can come on this show and explain why you've got a position or a campaign that is transcendent, that can reach into both parties. I think that's it's a winning opportunity. We've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. This is Jim. How are you today?
Good, Jim. What's up?
You know, your statement about you've not been contacted by the GOP doesn't surprise me. Unfortunately, I have to vote with an R because we only had a D or an R after a candidate's name.
Yeah.
You know, some states allow for conservative or another type of party or an I. I have not given one penny to the Republican Party in a long time because of their support or their lack of support for conservative leadership. And it could very well be, Kelly, they're afraid of you asking questions that they don't want to answer, because I think they're in tune with the elite Republican Party. I'm sad to say that.
I can't draw any other conclusion myself. I mean, but I find it sad that this is, you know, this is, they're on an undercard. You got 35% of the vote. You desperately need every angle that you can get, any help, and you turn your back. You don't even, I mean, it's the job of the head of the party or the party leaders to send people onto shows like this. It's the only place in town. And I'm so baffled that people want to run for office and not take advantage. I mean, it's free publicity.
Yeah, you know, Kelly, and it's, in my mind, you had mentioned Trump. You know, it's a very, in my mind, a very conflicted in one sense is, but Trump is only saying what these other chicken candidates don't want to say or won't say because they want votes. And I look at Trump as being a mouthpiece. He doesn't owe anybody anything. He's not beholden to them. He doesn't need their money, but he's saying what the base wants to hear. And let's face it, maybe you've heard different numbers than I've heard, but correct me if I'm wrong. I heard in the last presidential election that even if you didn't get hardly any of the Hispanic vote, and of course you got very little of the black vote, that the Republican base would have come out, Romney still would have won.
Yeah, well, all right. So here's a theme that people need to think about. This idea that you move to the center so you can survive is totally wrong. You move to the center of the road and you get run over. The fact is that you've got to feed your base, and this is what Trump is doing. And this is one thing. You've got to identify with the values of your base. This is just common sense. Now, let me add one more thing onto this that Trump is doing. people think there's this cult in America now where of authenticity, where these candidates, they're going to give what they really believe and offer it out there. And it's because they're authentic, they'll get voted in. This is not the American legal or political system. It is meant to be representative government. Candidates are supposed to do what Trump is doing now, represent the beliefs of their party positions. And if that doesn't make it, then the party needs to educate its own members. But you can't just deny in election after election the deeply grounded, the deeply found beliefs of and it goes for both parties. I mean, this is nothing unique to the GOP.
You know, when you look at all the other candidates running in the single digits, 6, 5, 6, 7, 8% or 9, whatever it is.
Yeah.
They are actually, that's the problem with these Republican elites and the people who have been in office so long. They're going for the other party's people rather than going for their own party.
Yeah.
Whereas Trump is going for the conservative base, and that's why he's where he's at, and that's why those other candidates are where they're at. They're not concerned about the base. They're going after something else.
And this guy Romney gets in this battle with Obama in these debates, and he just basically cleans his clock, and then somebody obviously came up to him and said, people like you because you're careful. You know, people like you because you're not excessive. Don't swing too hard. Jim,
Was his advisors that told him not to do that.
Absolutely. Jim, I've got to go to break. We're way over, but thanks for the call. Good points. All right, folks. So anyway, I do not remember, believe it or not, you think, I'll have some sort of ideology that is driving the appearances on the show. I don't remember ever telling anybody, no, you can't come on the show. If they had a reason for coming on, if they're running for office, if they had some event they wanted to promote, some issue that they wanted to get into. I think I've let every person on because I think it's important. This is the one venue in town it's live. You can get stuff on here. I try not to filter anything. So anyway, if you've got something you're promoting, it doesn't matter if it's school related, neighborhood, some issue, you want to save the green-eyed tortoise or whatever. It doesn't matter if it's, if it's important locally. Let's get it on here. It doesn't matter what the ideology is, but shame on the GOP for not reaching out. How can you possibly expect to do well at 35% when you're not even taking advantage of, and think of it. These people are impoverishing themselves and their families to spend money on a campaign. Here I've got free advertising time, for you and an opportunity to get your ideas out there to a bunch of pretty, I think that the listeners of the show tend to be educated and pretty bright, and you're going to turn your back on that for what? Anyway, 7:23. So this is a long explanation of if you've got a campaign that you're running or you're going to give me a call. Let's get you on the air. 7:23. Kelly O'Connell, we will be right back. All right, so 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180. Texts here, we've got one. Mount McKinley could do worse than Denali. He might have named it after himself. Mount Obama, true. All right, so I've got something that I'll play for you. This little interview, a little bit of the interview. It's a long interview. I'm just going to do a brief snippet of this from this interview, which I thought was, I don't know. I like Sarah Palin. I think she was treated unfairly, and I especially don't like bullies. And so I thought that she was bullied. She was accused of a bunch of stuff that wasn't true. For example, you can see Russia from Alaska comes from this mockery of what's that lady's name that did the Sarah Palin impersonation? I think there's so much viciousness on the left towards these, some of these people, that you couldn't be a normal person and run for office. You know, if you think about it, whether you like him or not, Barack Obama is a weird guy. He's got a weird background. Very few people grow up for part of their lives in what was the place that he grew up? Jakarta or whatever. I know some people think he grew up in Kenya, but very few people have parents that are either communists or Muslims. Very few people have Muslim names in American political life. He's got a smile on his face all the time, but I get the feeling he doesn't really identify with or care about anybody. I mean, he's just a very weird guy. Now, would we be better off with somebody like that or someone like Sarah Palin, who's kind of like, you know, she's just kind of a, kind of every woman, kind of, you know, a mom who decides to get involved in the city council and ends up taking it to heights that I'm sure she never even imagined herself. But here is a little bit of this thing from Trump and Palin. I don't believe that Sarah Palin, I think she was too trashed in the last, say, 8 years to be anybody's running mate. But here's a little interview with her and Donald Trump on One America News Network, a new cable that she's apparently got a show on.
I don't like what I see happening to America. The infrastructure of our country is a laughingstock all over the world. Our airports, our bridges, our roadways, it's falling apart. It's a terrible thing to see. Our politicians are all talk, no action. Millions of people are flowing across our southern border. We've got to build a real wall. With all of this, our country has tremendous potential. Let's make America great again.
I've said it since the day he made the sacrifice to hit the campaign trail. Voters crave the anti-status quo politician. They want results. They need a fighter. They need someone to fire all those political correct police. And this is a movement. The Trumpeters, Trumpservatives, these are what these folks are called. Everything about Donald Trump's campaign is avant-garde, and he is crushing it in the polls. One America News, you viewers, he's talking to you. He wants to connect to those who are going to show up at the polls and elect the leader of the free world. So, Mr. Trump, I had James Carville on yesterday. Remember his "it's the economy" silly. The turbulent global economy leads to daily volatility here, and that affects the working class. And I know that's where your heart is, in this working class. How is our economy really doing, especially reacting to world markets?
Well, if you really look, Sarah, at the economy, it's been terrible. We have 93 million people out of work. They look for jobs, they give up, and all of a sudden, statistically, they're considered employed. Our economy is doing terribly. We've lost tremendous amounts of jobs to China, to Japan, to Mexico, and to so many other places. And it's really very sad when you look at what's happening. We have taken away, they've just destroyed our job base, and we have to make a lot of improvements.
Yeah, and I don't think we're getting the truth out of the White House, the true state of the economy, so thanks for setting that straight. And Bloomberg reports...
No, the White House is not truthful.
Yeah, and Bloomberg reports that, you wouldn't mind raising taxes on yourself, and we know our current tax code, it's a joke, and it's unjust. And I, though, wouldn't be offering to let the IRS take more of my money, but share what you mean by fixing our screwed-up tax code.
Well, we have a complex tax code that nobody understands, and people can't figure it out, and they have to spend tremendous amounts of money for lawyers and accountants, and we have to simplify our tax code. You have hedge fund guys that are paying virtually no tax, and they're making a fortune, and we have to change our tax code. There's no question about it, and I say simplification. Now, you can go to a fair tax or a flat tax, but the easiest way and the quickest way, at least on a temporary basis, is simplification of the code. Get rid of deductions, reduce taxes. But some of these people, like some of these hedge fund guys, they're making a lot of money. They're paying very little tax. It's unfair to the middle class. We have to create a new, we have to help the middle class. The country, as you know better than anybody, the country was based on the middle class. They're the ones that really had so much to do with what we all have now, and they are being treated horribly.
You know, I want to talk about the campaign then, about that middle class that you're really resonating with, your message about fairness, just jobs being created in a better economy. On the campaign trail, specifically, I know a lot of military folks, and I saw a guy walk behind you, Mr. Trump, with an Army t-shirt on, and it reminded me, hearing from so many military personnel every day, personally, it's lately been all about you. It's a connection there that I'd like to know more about, the respect that they have for a truth talker, as opposed to just getting punched in the nose the last 7 years under Obama. How is it that you made that connection?
Well, you're one of the people that would know because you have that connection also, Sarah. One of the reasons I've always liked you so much, you and your family, you have that great connection. And it's really pretty simple. You know, you look at what's happening with the vets. They're being treated like third-class citizens. We have tremendous amounts of money going toward the vets, but we have incompetent management.
Well, anyway, that's almost half of this snippet of this interview. But all right, so what I was saying earlier, we have a representative government. It's stated in the Declaration. The Declaration is the introduction to the Constitution. It's meant to be representative. And yet for decades or longer, we have pretended that we're getting these people in to office that are great statesmen, they're visionaries, and they represent the truth. You know, there is no truth beyond what people want, the people on the ground. We're supposed to be representing people's opinions. That's the whole idea of representative government. Now you've got this class of elites on both the left and the right that are running things out of D.C. and all these states, total disaster, because they've disconnected themselves from the source of the genius of American politics, which is representative government. This is a disaster. This one thing, I think, has harmed America more than just about anything. This idea that you're going to have these statesmen who get up, these visionaries, and bring in things that are unpopular, but someday are going to save the world. It's a broken idea. It is not American. We need to get back to what Trump is doing, which, love him or hate him, he's representing what people want. And you can say that he is, just giving people a line or just pretending to agree with them. The reason it's successful is that is, up to this point for him anyway, that's what America was based on. Somebody to stand up on a national level and represent your opinion. That's why you vote for people. You don't vote for the next genius like Karl Marx to come along and fix everything by breaking everything. Anyway, 7:36, just my opinion. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text. We will be back. I'm going to read you some of this article that I think really explains what's going on with Trump. I think you'll like it. That's coming next.
You're not American. Who do you work for now?
The O'Reilly Factor, the number one cable news show for 15 years and counting.
Thanks for staying with us.
It's 7:40. It is 7:40, and right now it's 68 degrees outside. We're getting to that part of the year where it's starting to cool down a little bit. All right, so Weekly Standard is the name of the publication. You can find it at Real Clear Politics or just Google Weekly Standard and look up the article called Traitor to His Class. It's by Julius Krein. Never heard of this guy before, but nothing is more terrifying to the elite than Trump's embrace of a tangible American nationalism. So what is nationalism? Well, it's basically the opposite of the direction that we've been heading in the last, say, 8 years, 7 years, which is, you know, the president has gone and I think one consistent tone in Obama's rhetoric is that America is broken. America has a bad ethos, a bad idea. So he goes and apologizes, calls himself a world citizen, goes to Germany, and he's kind of apologizing, but he's really trying, you know, I guess if I had to ask what his motivations were, I think he's trying to put America in the middle of the pack or lower instead of seeing it as at the top of the mountain, like we're presented around the world and so many people are trying to move here to experience economic freedom and, you know, the Bill of Rights, Constitution, Declaration, all this stuff. Whether right or wrong, the president was trying to, I think, put us in our place and let the world know that we're not really as arrogant as we come across. And I think what it ended up doing, which is part of the problem with his presidency, is it's hard to feel good about a leader or a movement in which the leader is constantly trying to tell you how bad you are or how bad your movement is, how bad your place is. Which is, I guess, one of the problems with preaching about sin for ministers, you know, the message of sin is you're broken, but it's a totally different idea. I think that this president had his, and this is what I'm talking about, the idea that you're going to get a visionary to come in and bring in a whole bunch of stuff that is more true than anything that's ever been tried. And is we're going to fix everything. We're going to fix the universe. We're going to fix the world by getting America where it's supposed to be. We're going to fix global warming, all these universal ideas. We're going to address world poverty or whatever he's trying to do. Has created a disaster. And the disaster is in part seen in the economy, which has never been really functional since he came into office. It's seen in our foreign policy, which is totally contradictory and has created huge problems around the world, especially in the Middle East. And it's, you could apply that to the border, I guess, but national policy, it's hard to follow someone who is your biggest critic. And so instead of tapping into that, the zeitgeist is the spirit of the age, you know, this world spirit, the spirit of the age. What Trump is doing is he's bringing up kind of a little bit of Reaganism. You're not so bad. We can do it. We need to make America great again. What would the world be like if there was no America? According to Obama, maybe the world's a better place, you know? I don't really know. I don't know exactly what he believes. I just know that when you apply his ideas on a national level, they create a disaster. They create a sense of being lost, of we're not good. The economy is not everything. Anyway, this is all to say that the reason that I think that, and this is why this guy is saying this, that Obama, well, this is what Obama's tapping into. Let me just get into a little bit of this article. Well, most candidates, and this is right out of the middle of the article, most candidates seek to define themselves by their policies and platforms. What differentiates Trump is not what he says or how he says it, but why he says it. The unifying thread running through his seemingly incoherent policies, what defines him as a candidate, informs the essence of his appeal is that he seeks to speak for America. He speaks, that is, not for America as an abstraction, but for real living Americans and for their interests as distinct from those people of other places. He does not apologize for having interest as an American, and he does not apologize for demanding that the American government vigorously prosecute or enforce these interests. All right, that's it, I think, in a nutshell. People see the chaos that's created by wave after wave of illegal immigrants coming across the border. National officials shrugging, saying there's nothing we can do about it. In the meantime, we find out that the government has a secret network on a federal level meant to take all of these illegals and move them in across the country. Let's just say, let's get rid of the rhetoric right and left. What is that bound to do to a state, to a country, to a society? It's destabilizing. You know, if I took all of the people in China and moved them here in one day across America, what would be the effect? It would totally destabilize every aspect of America, our language, our way of interacting with one another, our economy, the social welfare system. What we're doing, just get rid of the ideology, stop thinking of the great visionary dream of bringing all these people over every year, 400,000 anchor babies, and then millions of people, fit them into the country in this place or that place, and where you see these schools that have 20 or 30 or 40 different languages being spoken in them. And just boil it down. What's the impact bound to be? So when people hear about a wall, they want that. Anybody of common sense wants that. Anybody who's a fan of America, if you're not a fan of America, I'm not going to say, what are you doing living here? But is America really so bad that we have to be broken? So we're then told by this demagogue, the named Jorge Ramos, who misstates facts and makes ridiculous claims like there's no such thing as an illegal person. You go into Mexico and tell them that. I'm here to live here. I'm a citizen of your country because Jorge Ramos said that there's no such thing as an illegal. And what's going to happen to you? You're going to be locked up so fast, you know, and you probably get a good beating at the same time. But this guy from that culture is coming here demanding that all these people be naturalized, that anchor babies be allowed as far into the future as possible. And he's telling us if we don't do that, we're criminals. That's crazy. And Donald Trump responds to this. So anyway, what Donald Trump is doing is basically what I'm getting at here is that we want people to represent a couple of things, our values as Americans. And they're not bad. They've changed the world positively. And we want people to use common sense. That's it. But you've got all of these people out there that pretend like they're statesmen, that they're visionaries, even in the Republican Party, represent the people and everything else is going to work out. And what if the people are wrong? All right, then it'll become obvious, then we change policy. Pretend that the desires of vast numbers of Americans are perverted, are ridiculous, are nonsensical because you're an elite. That is terrible. And that is bad. So Trump, whether you like him or hate him, is just doing this one thing and it's making him immensely popular. That's how I see it. All right. Take a little break here and come back and finish up. All right, 7:54. All right, here's just summing up a few things here. Lindsey Graham, who called Donald Trump an idiot, is dead. He couldn't win his own state. He's out of the race. I don't know if he's officially announced. Jeb Bush, Rick Perry's gone too. Rick Perry's idea of becoming the permanent critic of Trump didn't work out too well. Jeb, there's a story in the Politico, he's lost three top fundraisers that he had a contract with in Florida. And basically, people are looking at this situation and saying that Jeb has never really caught fire. And you can see how these guys expected their campaigns to pan out. And maybe if Trump hadn't come in, it would have all worked out for him. But it would have been boring. It would have been capitulation. It would have been, how soon can we give these people amnesty so we can get their vote? Think about how exciting it is when, you know, you think about, you never know what Trump is going to say, but he always comes up with stuff off the cuff. And the way that he comes up with it is kind of remarkable, because so often he'll nail people like Jeb Bush. He says people are falling asleep in at his press conferences. And then you've got this indelible image in your mind of Jeb Bush being boring. And then, you know, he asks Rand Paul during the debate, "You didn't hear me, did you?" And he's struggling today. And then you only find out later that Rand Paul wears hearing aids, but Rand Paul shut up for the rest of the debate, pretty much. So anyway, this guy has got a wonderful gut for, you know, responding to questions. Few things I'm going to try to squeeze in here. I've been studying rainwater harvest, and I think I'll save that till tomorrow, but I think it's a good idea. It's not really that complicated. Most of the idea is taking water off your roof and putting it into barrels. So it's something anybody could do. Would it work here? It would work better than not having it. I mean, we could at least get some of the water. All right. There's a spy that died about 5 years ago. He was zipped up in a bag. His name was Gareth Williams, and he had become unpopular because he had hacked into Bill Clinton's data. So it's 5 years later, but they're saying it seems like he was murdered because they got a yoga expert to crawl into this bag, and he couldn't zip himself up. So he's in a bag. He killed himself, and they think that he was murdered. And they think it had something to do with the fact that he may have found something in Bill Clinton's information that would have been unacceptable. All right, here is a little clip, and I tried to play it at the start of the show, of a woman who gets a text in Hong Kong. Her boyfriend breaks up with her. She falls on the ground for 90 minutes, flipping out, having a tantrum. All right, so anyway, you can't see it, so that's probably at least half of it. But this lady is just laying on the ground. People are walking by her. Some guy tried to come over and pull her up off the ground. She refused to get up. She's laying on the ground with her legs spread wide open. She's pounding herself. She's screaming. And then finally, these people get her up and kind of carry her away. But she is put on a stretcher and still screaming. So apparently, she didn't want her boyfriend to break up with her through a text. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, 7:59. Thanks for listening in. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. We'll meet you back in 22 hours. Have a great day. Ciao.